Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me once again Michael Hudson. He's the director, CEO, and chairman of Hannon Metals, and which is a company I've been following for some time now. It is a top pick in my newsletter. It is a sponsor to this show. Hannon trades in Canada under the symbol HAN. You can buy it in the States, as I have, under HANNF. Trading today at around 21 cents in U.S. money, 92.4 million shares outstanding, giving you a market cap, a minuscule market cap, I might emphasize, of $20 million. Thanks for joining me again, Michael.
Thanks, Jay. It's always a pleasure to join you.
It's really good to have you because you are a very experienced mine exploration geologist who's had a lot of success. Looks to me like you're on to another one that I'm following anyway. That's Hannon Metals. And you're maybe just give our listeners, those that might not be familiar with your story, it's a sedimentary hosted copper-silver target in Peru. So pretty much overlooked until you started paying some attention to it a few years back. Give our listeners a sense of perhaps grades and scale of this sedimentary hosted target that you're exploring.
Sure, Jay. It's always an interesting question just to describe the scale of the project. And I think we had a conversation off air, and the comment was it was beyond big in terms of what we're looking for. And that's the preface to, I suppose, how we got there. I was running around Peru as a geologist in the 90s and had indications of, well, knew of the indications of copper on the eastern side of the Andes. So the high jungle areas. So traditionally been a harder area to explore. I was exploring around there for different commodities in the 90s. And then myself and my long-term business partner were working for one of the world's majors, Pasminco. We bought their database from the receivers, so we had a huge database at hand that we've had for the last 20-plus years. And so it was a watch and wait, and certainly the social side of things changed a lot over in that eastern side. Now, there was a big drug-growing area back in 20 years ago, and that was absolutely cleaned up. And the infrastructure has changed hugely. And then I suppose, you know, gaining a bit more experience and ability to raise capital on ideas. Essentially, that's what geologists do, right? We're running big scientific experiments, and when they work, they can create huge value. And so we staked these projects about 3 years now. COVID hit and it gave us a bit of a hiatus, but we've had a lot of exploration over the last year. So just to describe the project, it's a sediment-hosted copper project. It's like a big blanket that forms at one stratigraphic level or one horizon in the rock mass. And these systems tend to be extensive, and that's what we've certainly proven here in Peru. So our exploration tenure extends for more than 100 kilometers in a north-south direction and, you know, east-west in tens of kilometers. So we're only looking in detail at a smaller area at the moment. We've gone through an EIA to go through to drill permitting, and that's advanced well, and we should be drilling this project, which is the next big step, sometime around Q3 this year. So we've demonstrated this pancake layer over this vast area. And it's really been a process of de-risking as geologists do from the large scale down to the known. And we've got to the point where we've done a lot of work on the ground in this smaller area, this EIA area, that's the 8 by 3 kilometers, still vast. And if it proves big enough in that area alone, we're really off to the races. You know, there's enough scale there to produce something that could be potentially mineable, and we've trenched this horizon over this 8 kilometers and found it averages 1 meter at 2% copper and an ounce silver. Now that may not mean a lot to anybody, but it's commensurate with what is one of the world's greatest copper deposits on Earth and still the biggest silver producer on Earth, and that's the Kupfer Schiefer in Poland, which is a geological analog. So commercially, we're within the similar grades and thicknesses. And I suppose just to talk about the commercial side of things, you know, Hannon has two different arms. I'm talking about the sediment-hosted copper now, and we've also got a porphyry copper gold target area a few hundred kilometres south. We're a top 10 landholder, one of the only juniors who compete with the major companies in Peru. We've got a huge land tenure. And of the sediment-hosted system, we've got about two-thirds in joint venture with the Japanese government, their arm that goes looking for and partnering with companies like ours called JOGMEC. They're spending $35 million to earn a 75% interest in their portion, which is two-thirds of our ground for the sediment-hosted system, and one-third is in our own right, where we've been working and finding similar earlier stage exploration in our own right, in our own ground, because JOGMEC have been funding their side quite actively. I should say the JOGMEC side, we own 100% still, and until they spend $8 million of high-risk capital, they won't have any ownership. So we're running things where we still have 100% ownership and using other people's money essentially for Hannon shareholders.
Yeah, it's very good. And, as I just mentioned, a $20 million market cap with this vast target that you're looking at, it seems to me that when the drills start to turn and people can start to envision in the third dimension a little bit of what you've, been able to look at, because I think most of it isn't on surface, but you have some surface samples that you've picked up. It seems to me that that will be the market mover when people start to perceive that this has that kind of scale that you're talking about. If it's mineralized, anywhere near, what'd you say, 8.3 kilometers or something like that? So the drills are going to turn then along the third quarter, I believe you said, right?
That's correct. We've now submitted our EIA, and that was a year, a body of work from environmental to social to archaeological monitoring and measurements and demonstrating what we're doing will have low impact and all those kind of things that modern mining companies must do. And that's behind us now. So it's been submitted and we're just waiting for that approval. And once that occurs, we're going through all the logistics and seeking quotes now for drilling.
Those are the kind of things that don't necessarily get investors excited, but they're very necessary. And I know you've been very patient and you underscore the need for investors to be patient. It's just this business, that's the nature of this business anytime. But I know you've laid the groundwork in talking with the local stakeholders, which I think is absolutely imperative. And it's also what you should do. It's the right thing to do. The people, and you're working in their backyard, you must respect them and give them the right to participate and to really thrive from what you're doing. You're involved in a wealth-creating industry, and those people stand to benefit, but you need to take the time to make sure that they're on board and you have an agreement and you understand each other, right?
That's very well said, Jay, actually. I couldn't have put it better. You've got to have your A-grade game on wherever you operate, and especially in frontier areas. I mean, we're doing things here that others haven't done before, and that therefore means that the local people don't really understand what mineral exploration is all about. The oil companies were here in the 70s and 80s, and they were very different times and different scale of exploration, and it didn't necessarily leave the best taste in the mouth of the locals, so mouths of the locals. So we've been working very, very hard and for the very reasons that you outlined. One simple point, we just used to send geologists in to look at rocks and then we might send social people in to talk to the locals after that. Mm-hmm. You can't do that now. It's social people first and then rock people second. And mm-hmm. if you get people off on the wrong foot, like anything in life, if my interactions when we first met many years ago was unpleasant, you wouldn't think much of me going forward. And that's the same thing with anybody, including local people in Peru who are the custodians of the land and we're on their land.
Right, exactly. And wondering, so the environmental issue, I think things look pretty, I mean, that's what you're referring to, the EIA has to do with partially environmental issues, right? So are there any environmental issues that could pop up that you're aware of?
Well, they're sensitive areas. Each area where we work is generally in remote areas, so they're unique habitats in their own right. But
sure.
We've gone out of our way, actually, in staking these projects to avoid any protected areas. Life is too short. In my early 50s, I certainly don't want a 10-year battle trying to do things that are really tough. So we just avoid any areas where there's any sort of protection overlays. We avoid any of the indigenous areas that just take so much longer to permit. So we've tried to create a simpler life for everybody by doing so. And then what we're doing is just standard drill permitting for Peru. So it's nothing new or different, but Peru is known to not be the fastest jurisdiction, but the prize certainly here is very much worth it. And you know, the market cap is reflective of a small junior with a few results, and smarter people around us are all anticipating, as you are, the drilling, because that will prove the thesis that we've done in two dimensions now over the last year. But that third dimension will be the real opportunity for people to envisage just how big this really can be.
Just real quickly, Mike, I'm wondering about metallurgical studies. Have you done anything on metallurgy? That's one question. And the other one, if you could kind of quickly sum this up. You seem to be very excited about your copper-gold porphyry system. It's very early days, but maybe you just real quickly give us an understanding why you're really excited about that story.
Yeah, so metallurgically, we don't have any fresh rock. We've got surface rock, so, mm-hmm. We've done mineralogical studies, and the mineralogy of this sediment-hosted system is very good. It's a mineral called chalcocite, which is probably the purest form of copper. Metallurgically, very easy and clean, and we know that there's literally no impurities, and so it will be a very desirable product to produce if we ever find enough and get a mine up and running, of course. But metallurgically, it looks fantastic. Is really the answer, and we've gone through that with the Japanese over the last 6 months. And remembering, this is also going to be a very large silver project, because silver will certainly be a byproduct, with an ounce of silver coming with every few percent of copper. Mm-hmm. And then to answer your question around the copper gold porphyry targets, very different, a lot more traditionally understood these style of targets. I mean, they're the most prolific form of copper in the world, and the copper gold subclass is really where the major gold companies need to go to keep up their production of gold. They're huge suppliers of gold and will become even more important. So, you know, all major companies kick the tires, so I'm not trying to say something that doesn't exist, but the majority of the companies that have been kicking the tires around us on these porphyry targets are the gold companies, more so than the traditional base metal companies, I should say. And you know, the opportunity is huge. It's about half our ground position, and we don't talk about it as much in the public domain yet, because we've been basically doing that groundwork, what we talked around social side of things, putting the social people to work after we've collected a bit of initial data. And you know, only over the last 3 or 4 months, the permits have started to be granted. We can start to deal with the local people and with much more granular nature. And we've been starting to produce the first results. In fact, our last press release was on soil sampling from those areas. Now, that seems awfully vague probably to a lot of people, but we've got anomalies over kilometres above porphyries that we're really rewriting the geological and economic geological textbook on. We found these intrusive rocks that bring the copper are the same age, the very fertile age, as those that produce all the copper in the Andes. You know, and Peru is one of the top few countries in terms of copper production in the world, and it extends right down to Chile, which is of course the largest copper producer. So we've rewritten the opportunity out in this part of the Andes again, I think you know, this will probably be arguably one of the greater discoveries of my career.
Wow.
It's, you know, early days. Let's see, and it's really the icing on the cake. It's quite crazy. People don't believe one of these large stories, let alone two, and we're working very actively on both sides, the sediment hosted system majority with JOGMEC and then the copper gold porphyries in our own right.
All right.
And And I suppose just two analogs, you know, you only really have to go and look at SolGold or Solaris, which are $1 to $2 billion market caps on porphyry copper gold systems in the Andes, and that's who we're chasing. That's who we mm-hmm. want to be.
Excellent. Well, wish we had more time, Michael. We're out of time. I want to thank you so much for that update. A lot to be excited about with a $20 million market cap. I've got to tell you, seeing will be believing, I believe. So we'll see, and we'll be watching very closely. Thank you so much for updating us today on Hand in Metals, Michael.
Thanks, Jay.